Hello and welcome to the TOVG podcast. We're back after a week hiatus. We're about to start like another week hiatus because Thanksgiving's coming up. Last week, Matt just had a job, a real person job, and the rest of us didn't. Next week, we have to celebrate American Thanksgiving because that's what you do in the United States.
You have to say American, right?
Yeah, you visit your relatives who voted for Donald Trump. And
oh, come on. Like 5 seconds in.
All of that ad space he bought here must have paid off.
Anyway.
There is some good news in the world. People have received their George socks, though.
I saw that. They look good.
So the world's not totally in crisis just yet. George socks still exist.
Yep, not just yet.
there's still some spark of hope and optimism in everyone's future, and it is my face on their socks.
That's truly what it is.
How have you guys been spending the past couple weeks?
I guess the majority of it, aside from work stuff, has been taken over by the fact that I'm really into Dungeons and Dragons now.
Oh my god. Wow. That's a real life game. That's not a video game.
Yeah.
Do you dress up?
I have a cloak. But oh, okay. when we did our first session, I'm the dungeon master of the session I'm running. So first time DM, but
the Matt Mercer.
Yeah, not that good, but when we did our first session, I put the cloak on briefly beforehand, and I was like, sitting in this for like 3 hours is going to be uncomfortable, so I decided against it. I might do it in future, but for now, I'm actually just my like downtime not spent doing work or video-related things has been either Overwatch, because they released a new hero and a bunch of balance changes, and writing my D&D campaign, which is essentially all of the time that I spent as a kid writing the first two chapters of a fantasy novel that I was never going to finish, but like in a concrete way that I can use in the future, because as soon as the world is constructed and places and people, I can just use this again and again for however many campaigns. So that's been fun. Dungeons and Dragons is pretty cool.
I bet there's like a lot of kind of pent up dreams and hopes coming out there, because on top of like pouring out ideas that you've had bubbled up inside of you, I bet it explains a lot about video games in the process too, like writing things that can be subject to player interaction.
Which I think it's different from video games for the sake of if players decide to just do something that the creator, i.e. me, didn't expect with the world. Like, I still have the agency of a creator to, like, whip up something new right in front of them, which happened a couple times in the first session. I'm not a pro, words just escaping me right now. I'm not pro at improv, is the word I was looking for, but, like, a couple of times I like mentioned a very like sparse side detail and they were like, I'm gonna go check that out, and I was like, okay,
crap,
time to make up a new character. And then just a lot of stuff like that, and it's been really fun and interesting. I wrote like this story thing at the start when I started building the world, and I was like, then I watched like a bunch of DM tutorials and guides and like helpful stuff, and I was like, I'm not going to write anything concrete like that because there's a chance that they're absolutely never going to see it. I could write something cool in the Northeast and they're just going to go West immediately and then fuck all that stuff I spent time on. So I'm just kind of trying to keep it loose and open right now.
Shift the continent, you know? So you, all that stuff, you just take it to the West, man. That's it.
Yep. Just rotate the entire continent around
spell that they didn't check. They didn't roll for. That's it. You're good. How many people are playing in your group?
Uh I made sure to keep it small. It's just four players and me, the DM. I've heard that taking on more than that can be really taxing, especially for a new DM. So,
have you had any moments where the whole writing and improvisation process just like completely jumped the shark and went to an utterly stupid place that no one expected it to go?
No, but there was like nothing stupid as of yet. I had enough prepared in advance, but there was one part where one of my characters playing a bard who uses bagpipes, by the way, attempted to get a job in the tavern that they were in playing for the night, playing music, and she rolled a good persuasion to persuade the bartender to let her for money, and then she went up on stage and rolled like a near perfect performance check. So what should have gone as a fiasco and driven everybody out of the bar, actually, like, everyone loved her bagpipe performance in the bar in the evening, and it was like, all right, well, that went better than expected. But like nothing overtly like, oh, the DM fucked up. Not yet, at least.
So you have a clean record so far.
So far, one out of one sessions.
I've always found it really interesting to read interviews with the writers of like the original Infinity Engine games, the Baldur's Gates and the Fallouts and whatnot, because a lot of their scenarios come from their experience writing tabletop games and basically writing scenarios into the video games that account for those moments where they expect players to just go in entirely wacky, unpredicted directions. And it's really been a lost art since the advent of voice acting. Because, I mean, if you're building everything in text, you could just plug it into the system with a keyboard and some time. But if you're doing it with voice acting, you have to record lines in a studio with an actor and get them out there. And I feel like there's a lot of underappreciated confluence between tabletop gaming and video gaming that we could go back and learn a lot from that developers don't really do a lot of anymore unless it's a super niche product.
Yeah, it's been really interesting looking up other campaigns, other notable things like Critical Role, or like I was sent the Matt Koval, who does some tutorials and stuff, and just listening to them talk about playing D&D for a very long time or watching players in action, that kind of like, I always thought it was like, oh, it's like playing Diablo, but board game version. So everybody runs into a dungeon and just, you know, spanks a bunch of baddies and gets some neat loot, which I guess is one way to play it. But the RPing, world building, sort of like social mechanics ways, something I'd never heard of at all. So now that I learned about it, I'm like, oh, this is something that's right up my alley.
How are you guys doing combat? Because that's something that's always steered me away from doing it in real life, is just like the thought that combat takes forever.
It doesn't take too long. We're doing like there's no defined board. I just kind of have a quick sketch of their situation in front of me, and I describe to them like, yes, you can see this guy, you can't see this guy, they're this many feet away from you, you have this, this, and this around you. And so, like, if someone's like, oh, can I move close enough to hit them? I'll be like, yes, you can, or you won't be able to make it. Stuff like that. And it's gone pretty quickly. We only had one combat session because they spent, like, 3 hours in the town before we got out of it. So we just, like, kind of, like, tacked on a little combat session outside as they were leaving.
I bet one of the reasons I've always been really afraid of the idea of having to do RPG combat in real life is because video games have so many bad guys that need to be killed.
Yeah.
Is there substantially less bad guys to be murdered in the world of RPG gaming versus video gaming?
It's really just based on your preference. I don't think many situations that I've seen, at least watching like Critical Role and stuff, they don't really put too many enemies, like just like raw amount, because that does slow down combat, make pacing really weird and stuff. Like I just had like four goblins was their first encounter, and they like mopped up three of them almost immediately, and so I had the third goblin roll to, or the fourth one roll to like quickly and like and flustered pull out his horn and blow like a backup reinforcements call, which he failed. So they ended up just being four goblins, but I don't think you see more than like eight bad guys in one single session without like breaking the flow a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or unless it's like a really special situation where it's like there are 20 people around, but this isn't meant to be like you're not meant to fight here. You're meant to run or something like that, you know?
Yeah. So I guess you have to like somehow get the message across to the players what they're supposed to do.
Right. Or put like a big ass chandelier above 10 of those guys that they can knock down or something. Something cheesy like that is usually when there's a lot of things involved.
That sounds like a stunt from a pirate movie.
There are pirates in my campaign.
Oh, of course they are. Yeah.
It's a coastal, but they're starting in coastal towns. So, I mean, they can go inland, but there are pirate characters that I have ready to go.
So
but yeah, that's about it in Overwatch.
Speaking of piracy.
Okay.
Oh.
Of the software sort and underground online world of hackers that may be involved with that. Watch Dogs 2 is all right.
Yeah, I heard it was like doable. I heard it was like a pretty good game.
I think it would be like a really great sale pickup. I really like what they've done with the main story missions, but it is still a Ubisoft sandbox game. The thing is, like, at this point, it's hilarious seeing them try to just completely give up on the whole tower thing. You don't climb towers. All of your Ubisoft sandbox fun icons just appear on the map as soon as you walk out of the tutorial mission. It might not be the tutorial mission. It might be like story mission number two, but all your icons are there. You don't got to climb towers to get to them. Instead, this time you just kind of fast travel to the nearest fast travel point and then open up your menu and order a car and then drive there, which is a methodical process of its own. And it seems like they already built the game to be unlocked via towers, but when they got such a negative reaction to Ubisoft towers being so lame in 2014, they redesigned it so that now the quest objectives for a lot of the story missions are at the top of towers.
Oh, okay.
So you still climb a lot of towers. They just like don't want you to know you're climbing a lot of towers. And that's hilarious. I mean, it gets old climbing those towers, but you can stop safer than you could in the last ones. But the thing about it that makes it really all right is that they figured out how to make open world stealth work. Well, I don't know, like MGS5 also figured it out, but they figured out how to make Ubisoft sandbox game open world stealth works. Far Cry has always kind of felt half-assed because once you more or less like look at an enemy, they're able to look at you and thus initiating the magic of every single enemy in the whole camp, knowing exactly where you are. So as it turns out, the way to get Ubisoft sandbox game stealth to work is with drones, basically giving you multiple camera angles to see enemies with for them not to see you with. And you do a lot of missions that feel like the four good ones in the original games. Did you guys play the first Watch Dogs?
Yep.
No.
Yep. It's something that got a lot of harsh criticism, but I've always felt that it was, if not okay, then at least like hinting at some kind of potential there. Like, I can't necessarily say it has good stealth, but I always like sneaking around anyway. So seeing them refocus the player's tool set on stealth is pretty all right, but the game also has the worst case of, I didn't say it in the review because people would hate me for it, but it has the worst case of cognitive dissonance that I may have ever seen in like a big fully budgeted AAA video game. So,
like, expand on that. Like, how so?
The idea is that you're playing a brilliant young hacker who wants to lash out against a system of racial profiling that predicted him having like an 80% probability rate of growing up to be a criminal because he grew up as a black kid in Oakland. He like hacks into the system and finds a predictive criminal record of him breaking and entering before he ever commits the crime. And then he ended up being the suspect on a trial. They gave him a real hard time. So you go through the game like breaking and entering into people's houses and killing security guards in order to expose the truth of this system that predicts like pre-crime, like in Minority Report.
Yeah.
So like on top of that, you also have this whole element of you being a member of DedSec, a hacktivist organization that aims to expose the truth of powerful people abusing the electronic data collection systems in place by you yourself abusing the electronic systems in place. But the thing is that they never really self-reflect on that. Throughout the whole story, the good guys are always played as like good, chummy, fun kids who joke and laugh about what they're doing, and they never have a moment serious of being like, oh, are we the bad guys?
They never have like a game theory episode moment.
No, they never think about how they might be Sans. but the one that I dwelled on in the
is
review
it self-aware?
Is
like
no,
is
and
it...
that's like the pro. It's like it's self-aware, but it's not self-reflective. Like they are aware of how stupid the hacker culture depicted in the first game was and compensated for that by just going all the way up to 11 with it and openly acknowledging how stupid the whole situation and the people in it are. And there's a lot of good campy fun to be had there, but what it has in self-awareness, it's like completely lacking in self-reflection. And the other angle of this that I dug into in the review is the brand PR image. You play as the leader of the San Francisco chapter of DedSec. The whole conflict of the storyline is cultivating a positive brand image for DedSec. It's making DedSec look cool. It's making people believe in your cause. And if you play it like a GTA game where you're running over pedestrians and getting into cop chases and shooting cops before you burst into the rival gang's complex and like massacre everyone in a ruthless grab of power, then how in the world would the kids still think that you're the cool guy? Like I imagine if people started, imagine if WikiLeaks did that, like if WikiLeaks was a street gang that killed people and ran over pedestrians and got in car chases and shot up the cops. It makes no sense. And there's such a focus on stealth and being a mischievous little trickster hacking everyone's electronics that it seems like I'm fairly certain that at some point, if not multiple points during development, the game was being pitched and developed without guns entirely, because you don't need them. You never, ever need to be doing the ridiculous ultraviolence that you do in a GTA clone. In fact, it's like actually way easier and kind of overpowering to go down your stealth branch, because you unlock a button that just stuns enemies right on the spot. Yeah, like two ticks, maybe even one tick down some of the stealth upgrade branches, you get a distraction button that makes a guard's phone ring so he checks his text messages if he's not aware of you, or like blasts loud noise into his headset, which makes him want to like sit down and take a break in the middle of combat.
Wow.
So what you do is you send out two drones and like point at guards and mash the L1 button on all of them to drone your way into super secret gang hideouts to grab the objectives and run out of there entirely with your drones. And it's pretty, it feels good seeing these little drones do the dirty work and then pressing the O button when you're done and having the camera zoom like 50 to 100 feet a block away from the place you're supposed to be sneaking in to see your like cool hacker dude pack up his laptop and walk away with no one the wiser. And
that's pretty cool.
That feels like the way the game's meant to be played, but they also have to release a not if not a GTA killer, then something that taps into the GTA market for kids who want to shoot stuff up and cause chaos in the city. And that like really doesn't fit so many different layers of the narrative they're trying to build. And I'm like almost certain at some point that during development, they were contemplating having a real consequential punishment for getting people killed as part of Dead Sex Hijinks, because there's a follower meter. Complete missions, you gain followers, and even if you like shoot everyone and blow everyone up in the mission, the follower count always goes up. And it just seems like such a natural fit for them to try to do a Sleeping Dogs thing and make that meter decrease. Like in Sleeping Dogs, you had good cop, bad cop meters that related to different upgrade paths and different kinds of story missions. And that would actually be going the extra mile versus just decreasing your follower count in Watch Dogs 2 and taking away some player upgrades as a kind of punishment for not playing the game right. And I can't imagine that they can't really be more daring with an actually pretty unconventional, unique GTA spinoff that they've made. It still has to have like the most base, like the most bloodthirsty impulses of the player's id somehow be represented in a situation that doesn't even acknowledge that being a possibility.
How is the character of, what is his name, Wrench?
He's cute.
He's the only thing that had me interested in Watch Dogs 2.
He's really
cute. I think he's great.
I mean, when I first saw a lot of the stuff going on with the game style, I was like, oh, but give it a couple hours to grow on you and everyone becomes cute.
Right, because they're like, he's as dumb and over the top as the developers are self-aware about that, right?
Yeah.
He's like fucking Reaper or something, where it's like, yes, he's super edgy, like, we know that. We like embrace it. That's the vibe that I got from him.
And that's what I kind of like about this game style. It's like an old person saying hello, fellow kids, and just completely hamming it up to the point where they know it and they're just having fun fucking with pop culture. They're like having fun misinterpreting how like hacking and internet culture work that I just can't help but appreciate that aggressive self-awareness.
So this was the year to actually have some different shades of color in games. Oh. And they're all just okay. Pretty much Mafia, Battlefield, Watch Dogs.
So by different shades of color,
other than generic white male.
Just making sure. Yeah. I don't know. I think like I still haven't played Battlefield 1 yet, but I actually think Watch Dogs 2 is a pretty solid game.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think like one of the things that's really, really nice about this is like, I don't know how like the protagonist is built in Mafia 3, but in Watch Dogs 2, like him being a black guy is not even like he's not played up as a stereotype. Like he's a long way from CJ in San Andreas.
Right, right.
To the point
where
he
should be.
Right.
Right.
But the one thing that's really fun about it are the conversations your character has with the other black guy in the crew. There's a mission where you follow him to his day job at Google and like he walks into the office with a bunch of white guys and he looks at you and is like, would you like to try a pomegranate? Like just completely breaking the shade. I don't know what you guys call it, but there's like a lot of fun stuff going on with the conversations
Oreos?
between your guy and the only other black guy around that are just really fun to watch and listen to and also sound like a little more authentic than the usual.
All right.
Well, this Matt, is, what have you been doing?
Well, I haven't been doing much, but I feel like I've been playing something. But the only thing is that I played most is Metal Gear Rising, actually.
Yes.
And it was weird. And I sent out this tweet because when I beat the game about like the beginning of last week, it was before the election. And then you got the presidential candidate, presidential candidate in the game saying, "I'm going to make America great again." And it's the weirdest moment. I was like, wait, what? I had to check the tapes. I had to go back and look at my footage to make sure that that's what he said. It's weird. There's a lot of really, I would say like the only thing I didn't like is that it was just like the colors of the game. It's just gray, and kind of dead. But the game itself was just so, man, it was a simple story, straightforward, kill some bad guys. Raiden had some conflict with stuff, you know, and there was some nice anime moments where he gets mad and stuff starts happening, and it actually translates like what you saw in Metal Gear 4 in the cutscenes. It actually makes you feel like you're playing that cutscene, you know, where, you know, he's fighting action-packed and killing all these guys. But not only as an action game, but actually as a story game too. There's just a lot of good moments in the game.
It's such a
where
perfect
they
mix.
Do some joke. Yeah, like it's really good. Like it keeps coming. There's always something funny in some of these cutscenes. There's always something that's gonna get you, and you're like, "What? Why did he say that?"
I was like really shocked to hear you talk about how like gray and colorless a lot of it is, because visually, like the levels, oh god, like I actually have to like remember how utterly blue gray the entire city of Denver is. But when things are moving, like it's such a vibrant show of animation and over the top theatrics. Oh, it's so theatrical that like the words colorful and lively would like almost seem to describe how these characters move and talk, even if there's actually not that much of a splash of color on the actual screen.
Yeah,
the animations, they hold up. Like the game holds up just fine.
Oh geez, is it 5 years old?
Just fine. Like there's nothing, like you don't see any clunkiness, it doesn't feel weird. I mean, you got to get used to definitely the parrying, you know, you got to get used to holding the stick in the correct spot to do the parrying while that person is attacking, while the enemy is attacking in that direction. It's really weird. I don't know. Sometimes it was a little, sometimes I just, it didn't land. But that was like, I don't know, 2% of the time, maybe. Out of all the other time, maybe not 2%, maybe like 5%, but yeah.
Their idea is that their input for parry, which is the light attack button plus the direction of the enemy you're trying to parry, is supposed to give the player an actionable result from just spamming the light attack button. And I don't think it really works as intended, because there is a degree of timing required for it, but by the time you figure it out and get used to it, like it becomes a really, really interesting system that is supposed to keep the player moving, keep your blood flowing. It's not possible to turtle up in this game at all.
It's not the Assassin's Creed button where you just press one button for everything. You have to think
attacking about
the direction. Yeah.
The closest thing you have to a block button is just spamming the light attack button.
Yeah. For me, the spamming did not work. I had to stop. I had to stop with moving my stick, because when I would move the stick and hit the light attack, when someone's about to attack me, I always get hit. So I would have to stop using the left stick, attack with only just using the button. And as soon as he tries to parry me or attack me, I do the parry and then I use the thumbstick, because before it just wasn't coming out properly. And that's how I ended up getting used to playing. So I always get the parry all the time, because sometimes it just slips through the cracks for me. Maybe I just didn't get used to it enough, but or maybe my brain was just like, no, I'm going to push the stick this way when I should be pushing it that way, because I had my hand on the stick or whatever. But yeah, I mean, after a while, it becomes very satisfying. But I would say there are certain areas of the game where it's better used than other areas, like especially that boss. That boss was sick with that. yeah, the one where he gets angry and
he's my fave.
The music starts playing. The anime. It's great. You just
described every boss, though. I love it. The one where he gets angry and the music plays.
It's exactly what you like hear from anime, where like a hype moment is gonna happen, and you just hear this, you know, pop music in the background as you rip someone to shreds. It's great. It's so great, because it's, I don't know, it's like a perfect blend of just self aware or just joking around, and a little serious stuff in there too, very lightly, but it's there for you to, you know, not just like pass this off as some just like jokey game or whatever like that, even though it kind of is. It's just overall just a good game, and I don't know, anyone should pick this up, to be honest. I like wrote the script for it. I need to finish editing it up, but it's good. It's a really good game. A lot better than some of the other games I've played recently. Metal Gear games specifically. What are those? Yeah, let's just leave it at that. Yeah.
So wait. No, I don't know, man. Like, inquiring minds want to know. Are you actually just straight up skipping Peace Walker?
No. I am gonna have to maybe play it again.
Oh
and
my god.
Remember the memories again. Like, a lot of people didn't know when I say I beat it. Like, I was going for the Monster Hunter missions. That's how far I was in. I was hours in.
Those
I played co-op
suck, though.
With some random dude. Like, I went in there and I quit. I did the date with Paz, got an S rank. You know, I went in and that game. That game does stuff to you, man. That game. And I'm not looking forward to 5 or whatever. I just gotta put some time aside away from work and just wrap this up.
Did you do Rising all in one day?
2 days.
Okay, because I remember seeing you tweet about it, and like, I remember you posting a tweet of one of the very first battles, and you says, "Now this game is sick in a positive way." And then, like, 8 hours later is a tweet, more than 8 hours, but within a 24-hour span is a tweet of the final boss. And I was just like sitting there, like, with this huge grin on my face, imagining you being glued to this thing. Because it actually moves pretty fast, but have you done any replays?
I'm planning on touching it up and going back just before I finish the script. Yeah.
I would highly recommend ramping up the difficulty for another run. I eventually managed to get used to it on the hardest possible difficulty and posted a full playthrough on the channel. It was a lot of fun, because at that level, like, you really learn the intricacies of the parry and like specifically how it interprets your controller movements, to the point where I was just never getting it wrong, because it is really finicky with how it detects your upwards slap with the stick. But once you like figure out the timing of that slip of that slap, you can get to the point where you can parry just about anything. And the other thing that you have to do a lot at the highest difficulty mode are the one hit kill perfect parries, which I think is like a huge, amazing dimension of this game's combat system, that like really shows just how much depth is there, that you can
with absolutely perfect, impeccable, frame-perfect timing, one-hit kill every single enemy in the game, including bosses.
What?
Like, if you play your cards right at the upgrade store and go into them with like a super crazy overpowered sword and do those frame perfect parries and nail the QTE sequence that begins after that, it's like really, really tricky, and you're not going to get it right until you try it again and again and again, like 50 times. But you can one hit KO, like, I think every boss except the final one.
Damn. Holy crap.
And the final boss, by the way, I played just the final boss battle on the hardest difficulty for longer than I have played many entire video games. And that the song still didn't get old. It had to be that way.
Yeah,
I realized.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. One thing that was really ridiculous was the way they make you use the blade mode in the last boss. So I was like, oh crap. Okay. I got to actually, learn how to move this blade. Cause in blade mode, Jimmy, if you haven't seen it, like you have to, depending if there's free mode and then there's like, you have to use a thumbstick to kind of glide the way you want the slash to go. And yeah, you have to slash these perfectly in order not to get blown up. But yeah. Yeah. It's a good game. I can't imagine that on hard mode though. Can't imagine.
Give it a try. You'll probably like how much you learn in the process.
You're gonna like the way you look.
I guarantee it.
You're gonna like the crazy moves that Raiden's gonna pull off, and like how many Easter eggs you find along the way too. Like chopping the civilians' clothes off.
Oh yeah.
You know you can do that.
Yeah.
That's there.
Before they get out. Right.
Last but not least, I had a friend let me play with his HoloLens, if you know what I mean.
Oh boy.
I'm saying. Okay. Let me know.
I see what you mean now by how small of a field of view you have.
Yeah.
It's just like a little square in front of your face that displays augmented reality. And I think this is actually a quirk of the dev kit. Is the HoloLens like fully publicly released, or are these dev kits everyone's playing around with? Because this guy was telling me it was a dev kit and that in the final version, you should have more AR quote unquote hologram showing on your peripheral vision.
From what I know, they're only dev kits out. Like it's really closed, kind of like Google Glass, maybe a little bit bigger than Google Glass, but yeah.
And I was pretty impressed with the, I can't necessarily say fidelity or resolution, but maybe like transparency factor of the holograms themselves. They really do like look solid, but they're also a little blurry and a little pixelated.
What did he show you?
We watched a lot of YouTube on my wall.
Oh,
I played that game called Robo Raid, where robots drill through your walls and burst into your room, and you gotta pinch at them. Which is the biggest problem I had with this thing is it failing to detect my pinching gesture. You know, the air tap you're supposed to do.
Yeah,
I could never get it to work reliably. It did just for some reason didn't want to detect my fingers pinching correctly. And like maybe I was doing the gesture wrong, but it just seemed like sometimes it would get it right and sometimes it wouldn't, to the point where he eventually gave me a little clicker button that did the same thing, but with the button press instead of failing to detect a hand gesture.
Well, it was in your house, right? And your lighting is pretty. Oh, I guess it depends on what sensor they're using. I don't remember what sensor they're using to capture your hands.
It had a lot of problem with furniture and my computer. Like once I tried to click and drag a window of YouTube across the computer, it would start clipping into itself. And that's strange. But
yeah.
I enjoyed thinking of the possibility of like leaning back in the couch with this headset on and clicking and dragging a huge window of a movie across the entire wall and pretending that I had a huge big screen until that low field of view makes that not super possible. Because what you can do is click and drag a huge screen of a movie across your wall and then, like, walk 7 feet away and look back at it to the point where your field of view can cover the entire screen. But at that point, the resolution and the fidelity of the image is so low because of the distant viewing you're doing that you can't really see the image clearly either. So you have to be up close to the windows you're clicking and dragging around in augmented reality. And but if you're up close to them, you have like 40 degree field of view horizontally and like maybe even less vertically.
Mm-hmm.
It's yeah, like
it needs
like,
to grow.
it's like having a pair of or like a scope in the center of your peripheral vision that is all you can see with this thing. And I'm also just like wondering about practical applications too. He said, my friend who was showing it to me was a programmer and an engineer and a product manager who said that he was enjoying leaning back in his bed to like look up at screens of code or like using it to stand in for a second monitor. But I think this thing's $1,500 or something like that, some ridiculously huge price tag, at which point it would be cheaper to install second monitors in weird parts of your house than buying a Microsoft HoloLens.
Well, again, I mean, you keep thinking about these new tech like it's already done.
Yeah, $5,000.
It's not already done. These are just like demo stuff. This is like there's a lot of stuff. There's like freaking 3D images, hollow images that people have right now. I mean, it's expensive. I mean, and it's not used for anything. Like, why would you need that to be used for anything? I mean, later on, baby clubs, you're going to have like the 3D strippers or whatever like that. It's made out of light, whatever. Like, it's not going to be used right now. Like, it's just tech that's early. You know, like SSDs. Like, I always think about SSDs. Like, nobody wanted to spend thousands of dollars on those SSDs. Okay, before nobody. Now it's in every freaking laptop. And it's like the best thing ever. No one complains now because it's the best thing ever. Okay? No one.
What is the entertainment recreation application that would make an AR headset like the HoloLens the best things ever? I don't know. Like I'm really lukewarm on SSDs. I have not taken the plunge to have slightly faster loading times at the expense of a much smaller hard drive.
That's changing
also more
too.
Expensive to buy. Okay. But anyways, pitch me on AR. Cause I don't think I get
it. Well, I can't really pitch you on AR. The thing is, I don't have it myself. It's really new tech. Like you never know. You know how the world has changed since we were little? And you never thought that you would be making videos online and getting paid for it. You never thought, I don't know, these phones where we have these little gadgets, you know what I'm saying, that pretty much do anything on it. Like we don't know what life is going to be 20 years from now. You know, VR might just well fall off and AR just takes over because like some other tech goes well with this tech. And then all of a sudden, AR is like the best thing ever. You have to have an AR with you, you know. But I mean, I don't know. I couldn't pitch you on that. But 20 years from now, I'm pretty sure things are going to be different. Things
I'll
are going to
be
way different now.
Approaching my 50s, man, it would be weird to be making YouTube videos 20 years from now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You think that's the thing everyone thinks about. And you're like, you look at some of the old YouTubers and you're like, I wonder why they stopped.
Yeah. I wonder how, when, and why I should eventually stop. Because, I mean, it can't last forever, right?
I think with your, like, I guess this is kind of a conversation for off the podcast, but, I mean, you can use that to get a job.
I would hope so. That is the assumption I think a lot of us make.
Yeah. I went far with that. I went really far with that. And you are way more established than I am. So I would say you might have a chance. Because, I mean, I know old press, they're really not interested in this whole section of the world of, like, online video. And slowly they're moving over. But I think later on, I'm pretty sure you'll have a spot. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, because they're going to get desperate eventually.
Yeah, they will. How would you like to cover the presidential race for 2020?
Kanye Kardashian 2020. Let's make it happen.
And Hellboy, apparently, as well.
Running against Stuart Colbert.
It's a publicity vote. It's a popularity vote. You know? So, you know, it's going to happen. We're going to be voting in celebrities. It's fine.
I think when I'm approaching my 50s, I should run. I mean, I think you have to do like George some Reed, paperwork man. That costs like $5,000. But when I'm like 50, whatever, I'm sure the dollar won't be worth anything because of the Senator Armstrong recessions. And are there any more video games we would like to talk about before moving on to the news?
That stopped like 20 minutes ago.
There's going to be an epic rap battles of George Weedman versus like Kanye West. I want to see that.
I'll be the joke, rapper. The joke.
And you're
candidate.
Gonna have like a big blunt, like just in your mouth. It's
if,
gonna be
if
great.
If weed isn't legal in Georgia by 2036, I'm gonna move to Oregon.
I mean, you should just move to Oregon anyway.
I could move to California
if you're looking for the bush.
Oh. I thought you were making the noise, the news noise.
Welcome to hello and welcome to the TOVG report.
There you go.
Where we say the news in your ears.
Yeah.
Reluctantly.
This is really going well so far.
Forum users have been speculating over the past two weeks that CD Projekt Red is prepping for a hostile takeover. CDPR responded to the rumors to GameStop, however, I mean GameSpot, saying a spokesperson for CD Projekt said this measure is not in response to any recent event. The meeting is taking place to vote on preventative measures should the company ever face a hostile takeover bid.
What the fuck is happening right now?
The story originated from a forum poster on NeoGAF, who on November 4th posted that a November 29th shareholder meeting will discuss a vote on whether or not the company should buy back its own stocks. As well as merging the subsidiary company that owns the Witcher and Cyberpunk IPs back into their CDPR parent. And whether to change the company's quote-unquote statute.
Oh my god. Can we just read the news, please? I doubt anybody caught anything from that.
So this sparked a lot of speculation that a big game publisher might be trying to buy out CDPR. Rumors which were later clarified as moves the company is making to prevent that from supposedly happening in the future. However, that appeared to break out as a story during some very unfortunate timing in which their lead designer for Gwent left the company.
Okay.
So under the assumption that CDPR is trying to remain independent and be the cool guys, you might be able to interpret that move as some kind of a disgruntled employee not wanting to put up with the new direction the company is heading. But quotes from him actually speculate on him leaving the company to make his own projects. He said in an interview with Eurogamer, this is the lead designer for Gwent, Damien Monnier, saying, I have no idea yet, but It has to be an exciting project and a cool company. We'll see. So he doesn't exactly sound like he has negative news to report from the inside of CDPR so much as it just seems like their company is growing faster than they anticipated, and now they have to take steps in order to prevent the hostile takeover. People were panicking over one day last week from actually happening.
Oh.
A new Metro 2033 game is in the works, teased for a post-2017 release.
Sorry, CD Projekt Red is your thing, man. I don't have anything to add to any conversation about them.
Well, like, a lot of people hype them up for being a really GOG unconventional... Support. Yeah, yeah, like, they're running GOG, selling 20-year-old DOS games, running through an emulator on DOSBox. They're putting out this cutting-edge, huge 70-hour Witcher game that doesn't really fall into the same traps as the rest of the AAA industry. And they're like treated as a golden goose of the industry among a lot of fans. So people are naturally like more inclined to panic should any bad news come out of them at all. I felt the need to like say, no, everything's okay.
Yeah.
A new Metro 2033 game is in the works, teased for a post-2017 release. A detail that got originally obfuscated by the Metro 2035 franchise IP website updating its in-series chronology timeline is having a new 2017 video game release. So this is, like, interesting. They're still making Metro books. They wrote a Metro 2035 book and published it, I think, this year. Maybe last year. But really, really recently, I knew they had written a sequel way back in the day, but I didn't know they were keeping this series of novels going. And on the website for the Metro, I guess, literary universe, they have a timeline of products and briefly listed a spot for an upcoming game in 2017, which turned out to be a gaffe. Deep Silver has responded in saying, no, it's supposedly coming after 2017. Funny thing is that another sequel game hadn't even been announced yet. So we kind of got like our unofficial, unplanned announcement for a new Metro sequel by way of that strange, fumbly news story.
Another series that I'm not really super invested in, so like... All right.
I quite like the first one, and second one I never got to play, actually.
They're both solid. I mean, the second one is a lot more of the same. And in fact, like I would think it's like a little more unrefined because of a lot of the Ranger hardcore features from the first game that I loved that they took out. I don't know. If you play it on Ranger hardcore, suddenly Metro 2033 has amazing combat that ends and begins organically and has you really, really panicking as you're trying to find bad guys through the darkness and stay stealthy. And in the sequel, they launched the game with that difficulty mode being DLC. So I never got to know what that's like. They might have fixed that now. They might have released a patch, but that was one very, very strange decision made while the project was in development from THQ, who were in the process of going bankrupt and panicking and making a lot of dumb decisions. Deep Silver is typically a much, much, much less offensive publisher. So hopefully whatever new game they do won't carry on that kind of nastiness. Because I can't imagine like developers want that situation.
Yeah.
Where they like make a cool alternative difficulty mode that makes the game look and play different, but only release it under a tier of premium whale consumers. But either way, another game's coming, apparently. Look forward at some point after 2017. Just don't get your hopes up during 2017. You're gonna have other things to worry about. A new EA reviewing transparency policy has gone into effect. They made the announcement on their German language blog for some reason about how sponsored content will have to have a watermark on videos clarifying that it is an advertisement by EA. Game reviews will have to have a watermark in quote unquote the beginning of the video saying it is supported by EA, which sounds like fairly easy to get along with, like just kind of an extra mile to comply with FTC standards. The one thing I worry about is that language. It's supported by EA, which I feel like a lot of viewers are going to misinterpret as being ad supported by EA, not necessarily supported by a free $60 value review copy. Because I mean, like the differences between doing a brand deal and just getting a review copy are like vast, a grand canyon of monetary differences. An ad deal can like be up to, I don't know, $5,000 max if you really know how to negotiate. That's a lot of $60 video games. I think I'd rather that watermark say like review provided by EA rather than supported by EA. Supported seems like the wrong word.
Yeah, it's it's a word that could technically apply, but that's not how people are going to see it.
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
A lot of people are kind of misinformed and don't really look up this type of stuff. So when they see that, it's automatic at that point. They're not going to go and do their research.
By EA. Yeah, of course he's not going to shit on the game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it gets thumbs up, and it's going to be like the top comment.
So I'm actually a little worried about this. Like the more I think about it and the more I look at this watermark, I mean, advertisement, sure, whatever. Advertisement, like you're fair game for the masses at that point. But like getting a review copy and calling that supported by the publisher seems a little stretchy. I mean, it's not wrong, but it could give the wrong implication.
Yeah, it's
supplied by EA.
Yeah, that's how most people do it. Review copy supplied by blank.
Yeah,
that's supplied or provided by.
That's almost just change the same word.
Yeah, it only hurts EA in the end, because if it's a, you know, the person still gets the review copy, they still get their video up.
But it could hurt the YouTubers who suddenly have a terrible reputation for being supported by big publishers when, like, usually, even though there are a lot of scandals of YouTubers having exactly that happen, for some reason, there's like this huge part of the fan community that thinks we aren't beholden to that conflict of interest, even though we are.
Mm.
I don't know, like, we still depend on getting review copies to some extent. The whole reason I don't have a Battlefield 1 review up, even though I'd love to play it, is because I didn't get a review copy and I can't be arsed to spend $60 on it.
Yeah.
I spent $60 on MGS5, and but I mean, that's Metal Gear. Like, that's
Metal Gear.
That is like my pinky toe.
Right.
If I chopped my pinky toe off, I might look and perform worse than the original version of me that includes the pinky toe.
The segues. Holy crap, that might be the best one.
Much like this really absolutely embarrassing report coming out of Digital Foundry and other sources from other people playing other games, that there is a list of games that look and perform worse on the PS4 Pro compared to the PS4 original. The weirdest fucking one is The Last of Us Remastered. It gets like frame drops, not big ones, 5 or 6 frames per second. But the fact that happens, I don't understand. Like, if you do this same kind of upgrade on a PC platform, like the game's just going to like flat run better, unless it's a horribly poorly optimized game in the first place. I mean, maybe that's the case, but some of these other examples like speak to problems that are hopefully just early launch week issues with the PS4 Pro. Skyrim Remastered, Deus Ex Mankind Divided, and World of Final Fantasy have weird visual and performance issues on a platform that is supposed to have more powerful performance.
Yeah. I did. This is something I didn't expect to see at all, but
it's the exact opposite
of what the game industry never ceases to prove me wrong.
Come the fuck on, people. What the hell is happening here? When so many aspects of buying a console game come with so many caveats of inconvenience and wait times and bugs and glitches, and now just the more expensive, better performing version of a console just doing the exact opposite. I mean, they are, you know, really small frame jobs, to be fair, but the fact that they're there doesn't set a good precedent.
I mean, maybe in Deus Ex, maybe in Skyrim Special Edition, but fucking World of Final Fantasy?
Yeah.
I don't know, that game's real heavy on the bokeh filter.
I am unamused.
It's a very demanding filter.
Yeah,
blurring the background is
gotta
killer.
Get that blurry goodness.
You gotta blur it up real good. Make sure the viewers are only looking at the clear stuff. Everything else just has to be implied.
Why the hell is Skyrim running at 30 FPS?
Gosh, that kills me too. I saw the DF side-by-side comparison of Skyrim remastered on the PS4 versus Skyrim vanilla on a PC, and it was depressing.
This is exactly what I was saying. Like, what are you paying for here? Like, what are you really paying for here? Are you actually going to get your
box
60 frames? Like, are you actually going to, like, come on. Come on. Yeah. These don't look any different. This is sad.
Play it on your 4K TV and sit less than 2 feet away, the screen will be slightly sharper.
Oh my god. Oh my gosh. I feel sad for everyone who bought a PS4, including my friends, which I told not to buy.
But, don't you have a PS4? Do you feel sorry for yourself?
No, PS4 Pro, sorry.
Oh,
PS4
oh.
Pro. Yeah. No, PS4, no, you're fine. Play your games. You're going to get the games anyway.
I'm wondering if it's going to have the same problem that the Wii U had, where mainstream consumers just don't even know what it is. Because, like, I don't think I even know what it is. Because
Well, now I definitely don't know what it is.
It has support for 4K TVs, but it doesn't natively render the games at 4K. It upscales them, which isn't going to look like a world of difference from the original one. Just like a slightly sharper image quality. You can apparently enable options in games that support it, like Nio, to improve anti-aliasing at higher resolutions and improve frame rates on the PS4 compared to the original. But the original still doesn't seem like that far off from the precedent they're setting with the Pro. I mean, 1080p 60 with shitty anti-aliasing isn't going to look like that different of a game that's running in 1080p 60 with good anti-aliasing. I mean, it'll look worse, but not $400 new console worse.
Yeah, it's not. What you going to do? Trade it into GameStop, get your $100 credit, if even, and pay another $300 for this? Nah, man. Get yourself some
$400
games.
$400 is a lot of Happy Meals.
Yeah,
no, you could buy a lot of garbage fast food with that money.
Yeah, wouldn't recommend it, but yeah, a lot of In-N-Out.
Mm-hmm. You could $400. You couldn't go to Japan with $400, but you could come close if you know where to look for tickets.
Yeah, that we won't tell you. But yeah,
no. So supply and demand, folks. we're just being rational.
Yeah. Hopefully it gets better. For the people who bought it, hopefully it gets better. But all I want to see is Bloodborne running 60 frames per second. And, you know, and then we can talk. And then you can say, you know, it might be worth it. Yeah. You know? But after that, if it's not, then I don't care about no pro.
One can hope, but you don't hear a lot of support for that game these days.
after they launched the DLC, they put out a final patch and just seemed to have forgotten about it, unfortunately. The players had a Bloodborne reboot day, which was fun, but that was the players, not the developers. God damn it. I don't know, though. Like, just thinking about Bloodborne at 60 FPS might make me like a little tempted to do the upgrade when it becomes cheaper.
Yeah.
But then again, seeing...
But does it even run at 60 FPS?
See, it might not have even been designed to ever run at 60 FPS, because when you patch Dark Souls on the PC to 60 FPS, there are certain ladders that might cause you to fall through the ground forever. There are menus that if you click through too fast will lock up and break the game.
Oh, and,
and just imagine what it would be like on a closed platform that they never intended to have even the users be able to patch it up to 60.
Well,
never Bloodborne mind, remastered. Man. You just wait. It might happen.
But I haven't bought it yet.
Sure. From software. Do something like that.
Mm-mm.
Bloodborne,
I'm actually
Scholar
shocked
of the
that
First
they haven't done, I'm actually shocked they haven't done Dark Souls 1 remake or like remaster yet.
I really want to play Demon's Souls, but I've never had a PS3 to go all the way through it with.
Yeah, or that. It seems like those are ripe for the picking.
Shoe-ins.
The greed machine.
Yeah. Greed machine is turning. People will buy it.
Way more ripe than fucking Skyrim. Jesus Christ, can I'm not ever going to get over that.
Skyrim Special Edition running at 30 FPS.
I'm not going to get over that.
It uses a slightly greener filter. The clumps of vegetation are slightly larger. Texture resolution is lower for some reason.
Either of the other first-person Bethesda Elder Scrolls games in like the recent generations would have been a better choice by far.
Did you see that
video games suck?
That tweet from that pizza restaurant, it might have been Domino's, it might have been Pizza Hut, but when Skyrim Remastered came out, they posted a tweet about how much nostalgic good times you could have ordering a pizza and reliving the nostalgic classic video game experience of Skyrim, like in the good old days.
No.
It's really funny now that Skyrim is considered nostalgia fodder. I mean, it's 5 years old. By the way, Metal Gear Rising is only 3 years old. It's still not classic rock just yet. Oh. But Skyrim is, apparently.
You know, I joke, but then they remastered The Last of Us in like 6 months, didn't they?
Yep.
Well, you know, PS4 needed something.
It sure wasn't the pros. Hey!
Bloodborne wasn't out yet. They had to have... They had to have something on the Bloodborne machine.
Yes.
Something. So,
and,
yeah.
And people give Nintendo shit for Wind Waker HD being their, like, check out our new console on the Wii U, but, like, fucking Sony did the same shit. All right.
Everybody
I'm
did,
done.
Yeah.
Speaking of
the same shit games after that.
But, we're all done deep down inside. We're donezo.
Yeah.
Pretty done with all this
video
game nonsense.
We don't
want to
get overdone. Yeah.
Yeah, because who likes overcooked meat? Come on.
No, nobody does.
Medium rare at most.
Medium rare.
That's
is
disgusting. Guys.
Is best rare.
I don't know.
Why,
I never,
you don't like medium rare?
No. I like
you
well
don't like
done.
The metallic bloody.
Oh no.
Hints?
Don't say that. Don't say oh no. Don't say
oh
that.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. We have a vegan on the stream
I'm
here.
I'm saying when I used to eat meat, I would get it well done. Because
well,
I don't
no
like
that's
why,
you don't,
that's
no
why
one,
you're
yeah.
able to be a vegan.
Because you don't know
you've
what
never
you're
experienced
missing.
True flavor.
Right. That was the reason. I also don't like that egg thing where they bust the egg all over your freaking burger. It's disgusting.
Over
to me.
Easy eggs? Come on, man.
That's disgusting.
Come on, man. You're killing me. You're fucking killing
the
me.
The egg.
Like, it can't be too watery
dude,
for a burger because you have to still be able to grab it.
You just
burger,
wait till
man.
You get to Japan. They're not no. fetuses. They're
oh man, dude, that on a nice fried piece of unagi over rice. Oof.
Nice fetus. Yeah, delicious.
You just wait when you go to McDonald's in Japan. All the burgers on the menu have a fried egg on them almost, and they're like $6 too. They're fancy
or sunny side up,
fried. They're in like same shape and form as the patty itself. You might have to break your rules a couple times on the trip, but
no, I don't think I can.
Oh,
I gotta lock them. You know, I threw away the key.
Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway,
tell your mom about us, I guess. Unless she likes well done meat, then don't tell her about us at all.
No,
don't
even mention us. She could come around. She could come around.
No, I doubt it.
Come on.
No,
give a girl a chance.
No way.
Oh, play Siege tonight, kiddos. New content dropped.
Oh, yeah, play Overwatch if you're more into that.
Play video games.
Character.
Have fun.
Metal Gear Rising.
Don't play Peace Walker.
Don't play PS4 Pro games because they might just be shit.
Oh my god, Genital Jousting has dachshunds now.
Ooh, dude, that is like the best game. I love going into balls.
Yeah, well, now you can like go into balls as a wiener dog. They have like these little wiener dogs flopping around the map with.
Goodbye, everybody. We won't be here next week for Thanksgiving.
American Thanksgiving.
Version. Yeah.
Not the Canadian one. Oh, God, so, the cactuses. No.